live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island. It's Cofield and Company.
It's
go 5 o'clock hour, getting all fired up. My God, I don't know what Boz was on when he played, Brian Bosworth, but he's on a life energy right now. He was freaking fired up on the pregame show as they made their picks. He's doing Boomer Sooner chant with the crowd around him. His neck was exploding.
I'm with him.
He's still a very dangerous guy. I just bet Alabama. I'm feeling way too much, I didn't have a strong take on this game.
Hope you're wrong.
I didn't bet a lot of money. I'm sure you bet a lot more. You have a lot more at stake.
Future of my favorite program, sure. Yeah, it's a lot more at stake.
Boy, you're really into this thing.
Yeah.
You don't think that Kalen DeBoer officially shut things down?
No.
As the Alabama head coach a few days ago when he said, hey, we're committed. My family likes it here, so let's stop talking about other jobs.
Well, that's clear, by the way, from everyone I've talked to that – has any working knowledge of him in a situation, that is a absolute lie. And I think that's why he said it, because everybody knows that's not true.
You mean he's not happy
down
there?
They don't love it there. I don't know if he is. His family, from everything I've heard, is not.
Yeah, and family does matter.
Of course. It's why, you know, Kenny Dillingham was hesitant. And by the way, what Michigan is doing to Kenny Dillingham, as much as I love Michigan, he should probably tell them no.
Like, what do you mean what they're doing?
I thought he was basically on standby.
Oh, really? I thought he was pretty much committed to stay at ASU.
No. I think he's on stay. He won't sign the extension they agreed to.
Oh, wow.
It seems like he's on standby, just waiting to see what happens with Kalen DeBoer tonight.
And you really believe DeBoer, that you have a good chance, you're a Michigan fan, that you have a good chance at Kalen DeBoer?
I believe if Oklahoma wins this game, Kalen DeBoer is the coach of Michigan tomorrow.
Well, sorry, I bet against you. If Alabama won, Michigan would just say, hey, we got to move on.
I think so.
We can't wait another week.
Like 2 weeks.
And then
like
you think it would be Dillingham.
I think it's very possible, yeah.
What about that conversation we had at the beginning of the show about Kyle Whittingham still wanting to coach?
Or maybe he's far down the list.
Okay, you wouldn't be that
interested?
Be the right
choice. He's a great coach, but no, no, that's not who I want.
Wow, look at you. I didn't know you had so much at stake in this game.
Sure.
I figured Michigan had turned its eyes to other guys on this list beyond, you know, Drinkwitz,
believe in the
DeBoer and Dillingham.
It looks as of about a half hour ago, the favorite changed in the trading market.
What is it in the trading market?
Was Dillingham a very big favorite? Now Kalen DeBoer is the favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's get out to. I don't know where he is right now. I assume he's coming back to Vegas at some point because there's a game tomorrow at the Run of Rebels. But I know CT Curtis Terry was in Seattle yesterday. What's up, Curtis?
Not much, guys. How's it going?
Good, man. Where are you?
I'm in Seattle still. Man, recovering from that hell of a ball game last night up at Lumen Field when the Seahawks pulled off the miraculous comeback against the Rams.
All right, well, tell us what it was like. I see you sent a picture of your seats. Was some of that, by the way, was that two-point conversion in front of you or at the opposite end? Because I know you were in the corner kind of adjacent to the end zone.
The two-point conversion was in front of us. And it's funny because there's 8:23 left in the game, and Seahawks are down 16 points. We start to walk out, and we stop right when we stop them and they punt, and we watched it like as we're about to walk out, like down the stairs leaving the stadium, and they, you know, obviously we return the punt for the touchdown, and then we stopped in our tracks and we literally stood in the same place for the rest of the game, and either turned around and watched on the field or turned up and looked at the big screen up above us. But I'm superstitious as hell, so I wouldn't let anybody that we were with leave. So like, we got to stay here. We can't move. And we stayed there for the remainder of the fourth quarter in the overtime. And it was pandemonium. I mean, I've been to a lot of games before, but that's got to be the best football game I've ever been to. And the fact that they came back in the fashion that they did and just what was on the line for them to be able to secure the playoffs, now being the number one seed, hopefully going into the playoffs, they finish the business the next two games. So that was a great night in Seattle for the Seahawks.
Were you one of the people yelling for Zach Charbonnet to pick up the ball? Like, hey, that's a fumble, it's a live ball, pick it up. I don't think he even knew it was, but somebody had to be yelling at him to pick it up, right? Were you one of them?
It's crazy because everything that was happening, we didn't even realize it. And then we're going to stop and they're reviewing and we're like, hold on. Yeah, that's definitely a backward pass. And so like as it was happening, like unfolding in real time, we were definitely sitting there noticing like that. I mean, that's just a heads-up play for him to be the one to grab it. And most guys probably wouldn't even think about it. They would just, you know what I mean, let it go or just kick it away. But the fact that he had the heads-up for Charbonnet to grab that, and that was a huge play, obviously, in that whole comeback and in that game. You can't take any plays off, and in that facet right there, that was one of the big ones definitely on the night.
You just called it a heads-up play. Al Michaels, I think, called it a brilliant play to pick up the ball. I don't think he had any idea. I think he was just grabbing it to hand it back to the official.
I agree. And I'm not mad at that, but at least he grabbed it. I mean, now, maybe it pays to be a good guy every once in a while, right? Yeah. You don't give the Stripes a hard time. You pick up the ball, you hand it back to him. Because he could have been a you know what and kicked it away, and in that case it wouldn't have panned out the same way. Brilliant, lucky, right place, right time, whatever it is, it worked out in their favor.
Puka Nacua, I believe in his tweet, told you to thank the officials. Did you do that? Did you thank them on the way out?
I mean, I'm thanking everybody. I'm thanking Puka. I'm thanking Stafford, McVay. You know, I mean, Davante Adams for not playing. You name it. I mean, if the referees had something to do with it, we'll take it. But again, I think in that game, you can't blame the officials. When you're up 16 with 8 minutes left, I mean, I don't think there's much the officials could do. The officials didn't help you with the punt return.
They did.
Point conversion.
They took 4 points away from the Rams.
How?
Well, hey.
That ineligible man downfield was a ridiculous call. Ridiculous.
If we want it, we can nitpick every play, and there's obviously some calls they missed both sides. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, right. You tell him, CT. Classic Adam Hill nitpicking. Trying to rain on someone's parade. The freaking black cloud over here. Let's talk a little hoopage. First UNLV, then NBA. And again, folks, we'll keep you updated as much as we can this hour on Alabama and Oklahoma. It hasn't kicked off yet, but it's coming up here in a couple minutes in the 8-9 game. Yes?
So come on sooner.
Oh, come on sooner. You're complaining about the open being too long. All right, UNLV basketball. You missed a good, very good Josh Pastner radio show the other day. He came in. He had a whole list of things that he wanted to talk about in terms of what the team has done well and some things that the team has not done well. And we talked about accountability. And one of the issues I brought up with Coach Pastner was finishing around the rim. And I said, you know, that they're at a – guys of a certain size, when you go up and you try to finish with a layup, I think that's a finesse move. And he kind of ate that up and started talking about drilling his guys on going vertical and being violent. And I'll tell you what, when UNLV missed a couple of free throws – check that – layups at him, I'm listening on the broadcast. You could hear Curtis was like, "Oh, you were really worked up when they were missing layups, and it just can't happen."
No, man, and it seems like it happens a lot. I mean, and I think that the comparing and contrasting from Stanford 2 weeks ago to last week against Tennessee State, to me, it's mind-boggling, right? I mean, because they had some of the same opportunities. They finished up against Stanford, against bigger, stronger guys, but they couldn't finish them against Tennessee State. But I think he's right. You got to go straight up. You got to be violent. You got to be physical. You got to turn. You got to pivot. You got to put your elbow, your forearm through somebody's chest. You got to go up. And if you happen to make contact, you have to. Most of the time, guys won't stick their nose in there anymore. If they get hit once, they'll back off. So you got to own that paint. And I think for the Rebels, when they're successful, they do that. When they're not, it's because they're not doing it. And it's a glaring difference. And they've got to become better at it, especially we talk about in the Mountain West Conference. As we eke towards conference play opening tomorrow and then a break until you get back into it beginning of January, they've got to be physical. They've got to be the aggressor, and they have to dominate, at least not dominate, but you have to play even points in the paint and all the boards because they're not a great three-point shooting team as of right now. So they've got to make it up in that facet of the game to be able to have a chance to compete during conference.
Curtis Terry's on ESPN Las Vegas. I'll tell you what, you know how intimate it gets in conference and how much teams know about each other as time goes along. And the scout, if I watch the film of the Tennessee State UNLV game, if I'm a coach and I've got some, you know, bullish inside players, and there's lots of them around the Mountain West Conference, I am going right into the chest of E-Man. Emmanuel Stephen, sure. He's got to get better. Pastner said that because Tennessee State went right at him with some thick dudes who were like 240, 250, and he got pushed around a little bit, and he's got to be a lot more stout.
Yeah, and on top of that, obviously, if you can be physical, go through his chest, and make him pick up foul trouble, then the Rebels they're in trouble because obviously Jacob JB came back, Elijah is still out, and so there's some inconsistency in the front line, and so if the Rebels aren't going to play strong and physical, and if they get in foul trouble, As we've seen on the course of the season, before they got E-Man back, I mean, they're going to be a thin team up front. And when a team that doesn't shoot it well from the outside, then that can spell all kind of troubles for you. But when you get into conference play, these teams are going to know what you do and what you don't do well. They're going to attack it. They're going to go at it over and over. They're going to mismatch hunt, and they're going to make you pay for it. And so I think that's where the Rebels, they have a chance to have some advantage. So if they can go with their big lineup, like we talked about them doing with Tyron and Kamani and E-Man, they can have some opportunities and get some gain some advantages. But if they're not physical and strong playing through that and finishing to the rim, then you might as well just go small and try to make an up-and-down game. But I don't know if that's going to bode well because you're not a team that shoots it well from outside.
This might be a very obvious question, a very simple question, but I was at a local establishment the other day, and actually a place, I think it was the last place I saw you at, Curtis.
Okay.
And there was a just a fan in there that said, how is it possible to go on the road and beat Stanford and Memphis and yet lose home and semi-home to Tennessee Martin and Tennessee State? How do you answer that question? How is that possible?
I don't know, man, because it doesn't seem fathomable to me. I think it's just a lack of just focus, right? And just taking the opponent for granted and thinking you can go out there and you can win any game because you won at Memphis, you won at Stanford, you had these marquee games or pseudo marquee games, you played well against Maryland in that first half. But that's not the case. And we've seen that in the parity in college basketball. I mean, you see now the parity in the NBA. I mean, we'll talk about that, but it shifts. Like, the Pistons are one of the best teams in the league. We haven't heard that since, you know, I mean, back in the 80s. But it's wild to me that you cannot have that kind of same focus and just go out and take care of the task at hand. Because if you do, I mean, you're talking about your record is completely different. And your momentum and your motivation behind you and your fan base and what you're striving towards as you go into conference play, it's all flipped upside down and for the good. And so I have a hard time with that. And like Steve, like you mentioned, I mean, when they miss layups, I'm like, oh, God, dive on the floor, get the loose ball, like do all the little things. If you consistently play hard the same way every time, it takes care of itself. But when you don't, that's when you get those inconsistent results.
Curtis Terry's with us. Follow him on Twitter at CT on air. Okay, NBA Cup. First of all, winning this thing or making the finals, does that give you momentum? There's actually been a good history in the short history of teams moving on to have successful season, making runs in the playoffs.
I'm kind of torn on this. Yes and no. I think, obviously, I think it's important. I think of what it provides you in terms of knowing that you can go out there, that you can win a championship, right? They talk about that whole atmosphere of playing in an important big game. But I think it just gives you that confidence. And from a team standpoint, you have that swagger. Like the Knicks, they have that swagger right now. You can see it in them. You can hear how they talk. They have expectations of what they want to come out and do and think they haven't been able to get to their ultimate goal the last couple years. So I definitely think it helps from that standpoint. But also, it means nothing in the long run, right? So you can win the cup. You can have a great, you know, cup games in November, December, or October, November, December. But then you can get into the playoffs and you can just flame out. And so I think it's an important balance to be able to make sure you're playing your best basketball at the right time. But like they said, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't guarantee you a spot. It doesn't give you any extra points going into the playoffs. But I think the Knicks, I think for them, it's a confidence thing to knowing that they are, you know what I mean, the best team right now in the NBA in terms of how they're playing basketball, that they can win that. And I think it's going to go take them very far. Other teams, I don't think it would pay as much dividend. But it means something. They're not obviously not going to hang a banner like the Bucks and the Lakers did the last couple of years, which I agree with, unless you're going to, I mean, that's like a rec league championship or intramural championship. But I think it's important for the right teams, for the right reasons, to play well and to set themselves up as they continue into the season.
There's a lot of speculation. Would they party or would they not? Apparently the Lakers partied in the locker room. The Bucks did not. Knicks, somewhere in between. I would say they mostly did not party. If you win that, you're partying, right? That's $500,000 and you're in Vegas.
Yes, Cruz partying in the locker room. I'm partying on the strip. I mean, let's be real. We're going to go out and have a good time. But I think that's a part of it, right? You have to enjoy the fruits of your labor. And I think for some of these young guys, especially those guys on those minimum contracts, I mean, they doubled their money from right there in one stretch of games. And I think that you need that camaraderie. And you hear, and my brother's talked about it, his time in the NBA as a player and a coach, that these guys, they obviously, they're in the trenches with each other in the summer. Then when they get into preseason camp and the fall camp and they get into the season, And a lot of times they have those road trips when, you know, if they go to New York, or if they go to L.A., or they go to Miami, or they go to Houston. There are certain places where, I mean, historically, teams, road teams don't play as well. And we see that with teams that come in and play the Golden Knights and play the Raiders in Vegas. But those teams have to have that camaraderie. You've got to build that. You can trust guys. You can have fun with guys. And it's not always business. But, you know, we can have fun. We had fun two nights ago, but then we come back on Sunday. We know we're locked in. We're going to play. But you know you can trust that guy because you guys had that chat off the court, or if you're in the lounge or wherever the case may be. But anytime you win, you got to celebrate it. I don't think you got to hang a banner for it, but you definitely got to pop a couple bottles and have a couple shakes of yourself out on the dance floor.
I'm glad you mentioned the Pistons a couple minutes ago. What is Detroit this season? Can they leapfrog the two favorites? The Cavs have not been that great this year. The Knicks obviously are delivering on some of their promise. Pistons gave the Knicks a hell of a time in the playoffs last year. They're the best regular season team so far for like 27 games in the East. What are the Pistons?
I think the Pistons are they're contenders. They're the real deal, I think, right now. I think they're showing that. Obviously, they make that run last year in the playoffs, and they go I think as far as they needed to go, or they could have gone last year. But Cade Cunningham, what he's doing right now, Jalen Duran, I mean, Cade's what, 28 points and 9 assists a game. Duran's dominant on the boards. You've got Tobias Harris. I mean, they've got a top to bottom. They've got a very well-balanced team, and they're playing hard. They're competing. And Coach Bickerstaff has them playing some good basketball. We know what he did with the Cavs, and he built them up to where they are now. But they're a young, hungry team, and I think, like you said, the parity in the NBA, it's wide open. And anybody can come out and win. Obviously, LeBron's on his way out of the league in terms of his production and his consistency. And so it's wide open. And I think right now it's a chance, just like OKC the last few years, and they go on the run last year, and the tear they're on this year, that could be the Pistons for the next two or three years. I think teams are going to start to see that. If you draft well, if you develop your guys, and you get one or two stars, you can have success. And even if you're in a smaller market or not the big marquee markets, and I think we're seeing a prime example of that in the Pistons right now.
I feel like Cade Cunningham is the superstar nobody really talks about, maybe just because he's stuck in Detroit. But what makes him so good when you watch him play and so effective? Because I do feel like he should be getting more attention.
I think so, too. And I think it's almost kind of if it's in Detroit, if it's just his demeanor. But he doesn't seem to me, you don't get the same bravado as you do with other guys in the league, right? Like Luka or SGA. Or even Jalen Brunson in a quiet, you know what I mean, kind of a matter-of-fact kind of way. But it's something to where he comes out, it's almost like the hard hat mentality. He comes out, he gets it done, he wins, and he goes back in the locker room and he does what he does. But the kid can play. And we saw that when he was at Oklahoma State. He comes out, he's had success so far in his NBA career. And right now what he's doing, I mean, he's putting up huge, huge numbers. And so I think for him to be able to have the success and not have all the lights on you, sometimes that's good because some people can't handle the bright lights or it gets to them and they start to play out of character. But I don't think that's going to be a problem with this team and with Coach Bickerstaff having been around the game so long and coached a number of different guys at all skill sets and all skill levels. Cade Cunningham is one of the guys that you definitely want him on your team. He's going to be a jumpstart dog, going to go out there and win and produce at a high level and give you a chance to win, and that's what he's doing right now with the Pistons.
Curtis Terry up on ESPN Las Vegas. Let's close by going back to the matchup tomorrow with UNLV hosting Fresno State in conference play in the opener. Fresno has Jake Heidbreder back in the league. He was the Air Force kid who went to Clemson. He's back. He's averaging 18 a game, shooting okay from three, but he's a dangerous scorer. Most people are very aware of Zion Collins, who was a Rebel commit at one point to Otz's program. He's averaging about 15 points a game. So he's better than he was a year ago. I will say a year ago, I think one of the games he just was not right health-wise against UNLV, but he only averaged 6.5 points a game against UNLV. Why is he going to be more dangerous? Why can this Bulldog team be dangerous against the Rebels tomorrow?
You know, I think it's especially with Zion. I mean, he's a guy that obviously everybody in Vegas knows what he can do. Hide better in terms of what he's averaging right now, I think 18 points a game. Last year they won six games on the season. They're already at that six games right now that they've won so far. So clearly Coach Vance has got them heading in the right direction. I think for the Rebels, they have to come out and compete, and that's the big thing right now. We've talked about, and Coach has talked about this as well, not playing consistent 40 minutes of basketball. We've seen stretches of good 5-minute stretches, 10-minute stretches, a good half. At Stanford, we saw a good game. on last Saturday against Tennessee State, we didn't see a complete full game. It was like 2 or 3 minute spurts here or there. And then at the end, it was just bad. But if Zion can get going, and Zion's the kind of guy that he's a winner, he's going to want to come back home, obviously, and as he's done before, and play really well in front of his friends and family. But the Rebels are going to have their work cut out for them, I think, because it's a conference game. They haven't been playing up to their level of expectation of what they want to achieve as a team. And you've got another team that where they're kind of a startup and nobody expects anything out of them. So they don't have that monkey on their back. They've got nothing to lose. They're going to go out their guns blazing and play free. And so I think this is one of those games to where if they don't come out and win tomorrow, you're obviously setting yourselves behind and you're going into conference play, but then you don't play in conference until, I think, the 3rd of January again. And so it's really going to set yourselves up to have that monkey on your back, be thinking about it, but not getting a chance to come out there and get some redemption or to be able to redeem yourselves for quite a while. And that's never what you want to have happen. But I think it's important that they definitely have to, again, you've got to own the paint, you've got to rebound, and you've got to make sure you keep Zion out of transition, keep him out of the paint, because if he can get going and start distributing, and if he can knock down shots, he's going to be tough guy to stop.
I don't have your game log in front of me, Curtis Terry, but can you remember a year at UNLV when the game before Christmas, before the holiday mini break, that you lost and what it was like during that break? I would imagine you'd be freaking miserable and kind of thinking about the loss through the holiday.
Yeah. I think we lost to Pepperdine one time. I think it was Pepperdine or St. Mary's. But what's messed up and is just tough. So, like, for me, like, we would always play this game, and would be, and like, it'd be like, it was typically like a 1 o'clock game, and would either be like the 21st or 23rd. Sometimes it was typically a little bit later. And so, but we all, like, I had my suitcase packed. I was leaving from the Thomas and Mack, going straight to McCarran at the time, and getting on the plane and flying to Seattle for 2 or 3 days for family, for vacation, for holidays, before I came back home. And we had 2 days over the course of winter break. We lost a couple of those games, and they weren't conference games, luckily, but you're focused on, like, what's next. Like, you're looking so forward, looking to get that time away, the time away from the court, to relax with your friends and your family, to decompress a little bit. And it's a trap game. And so now that the fact that it's a conference game, it's even worse, because it's a trap game that means something ultimately the rest of the season in terms of those standings. Like you said, you don't get the chance for automatic redemption 2 or 3 days later like you do in the regular conference season. So, again, I hope these guys lock in on it, because then you do get a significant amount of time off where you got to come back and play that La Sierra game. So I hope these guys do take it serious, lock in and focus. Because trust me, there's nothing like losing that game. Then you got to fly home. You got to deal with the loss. Then you got to come back. And we did 2 days. So Coach Kruger ran us into the ground before we got a chance to play that game, which was typically like the 30th or 31st. And it was never very fun. And so you got to make sure you take care of business on this one. Then you can enjoy that time off before you come back, kind of retune for the second half of the season.
You played on December 22nd all 4 years.
Man, Adam was quick. I only got through 2 of the years.
You went 3-1, and the loss was 14 points to Pepperdine. Year two.
Yeah. And I started that year too. That sucks. That's what sucks. So I remember. Yep. Yeah, we didn't play very good that game.
You went one for four, Curtis.
That's good. Wow. I'll take that 25%. I probably
could have shot
more. Maybe we would have won, but
four rebounds, no assists. You know, pass the ball a little bit more, maybe.
What about year four? What was the stat line on year four of that game?
All right, I'm getting there. It's actually close by here. So 12-22, played UT Martin. You won 74-48. Oh, boy. Not the best shooting game for you either.
Oh, well, we won 74-48, though. I mean, I didn't play very much, honestly.
21 minutes, 1 for 6, 0 for 3 from 3.
Wow, that you didn't. You actually did have 1 foot out the door on these last games before the holidays.
I don't know where my head was at.
Oops, sorry to out you there. We kind of left it.
Maybe next time.
Well, you know what? The funny thing is, and we'll have to get into this next conversation, the next time thing is a big deal in college basketball, because I don't know what's going on, man. I think there's an infusion of like 23, 24, 25-year-olds. There's going to be about 15 of them who join college basketball programs around the country. It is nuts right now with the NCAA rules.
Yeah, anything can happen. I mean, if I can do some digging, or maybe Adam can help me with this quick research, see if I can maybe get another year of eligibility and help these guys in the second half. I won't be much for going up and down the court. But half-court defense, I'm a dog in shell. I can knock down open shots still, and I can definitely encourage my teammates.
Well, let's not do it the last game before Christmas. That's not your best effort.
Another one?
No, December 1st against UTEP, though, 2007. 7 for 9 from the field, including 6 of 8 from 3.
Okay.
Crushed it.
There we go.
Six rebounds, 4 assists, too.
There you go.
There we go. That's a little redemption, too. That's what I'm talking about. I appreciate that, Adam.
Curtis, we will see you tomorrow at the Thomas and Mack.
You guys have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
There he is. Curtis Terry went to the Seahawks game last night. Big Seattle sports fan, Tacoma guy, and back in town for a 4 o'clock start tomorrow. 3:30 on radio side with the IBEW Nika pregame with Tim Neverett and some other dude doing color on TV. It'll be Matt Neverett and CT.
I'll try to get that game on stream somewhere in the whatever establishment I'm in Houston.
Oh, I thought you were going to go. I thought you were talking about going back to the UTEP game in 2007.
Get the stream of the UTEP game. No, I got. I mean, we're going to be battling for TV space. Probably their NFL game and a college football playoff game, but. I'm excited for UNLV and Fresno.
Remind me again, you are not a lover of H-Town?
Oh, it stinks.
Do you go get barbecue?
Yeah. I'll go. Well, and Bucky's this trip because I'm driving from Houston to Dallas.
Ooh, Saturday, night. I might have a Bucky's order.
Well, you won't get it till the morning.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the Bucky sandwich you got me, I thought very overrated, but I think it has to be like hot and on the spot.
Oh yeah,
it was very skimpy on the meat.
Well, I think we gave you the lightest one too.
Oh, you did. You're like,
we'll take the better.
You're like Cofield. He's trying to lose weight. Yeah. Let's not give him as much brisket as he normally can eat.
There's one that had like it was like a four meat sandwich.
No way.
That looked good.
I'm gonna look up their menu. I'm gonna get you got me like some cookie dough cookies.
That's what you asked for.
Those were decadent.
The banana pudding, and I think I don't remember if I did this on the show or not.
No, you did.
I discovered that I like banana pudding.
I know. You talked about having banana pudding at multiple spots. Guess what? Put me down for it. I want the banana pudding.
Well, I don't have a refrigerator in the rental car, I don't think.
Do you think I care about it? Do you know my habits?
That's fair.
You do know, right, that I bring Tupperware.
Big play, Sooners.
I bring Tupperware on the road.
I mean, I'm a little worried about food safety, especially this week. A lot of things going on out there.
Well, I will. When you bring the banana pudding, I will have it that day.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm going to arrive like around 4 a.m. I'll see you at the press conference, I guess, 9.
I'm getting there at 6 a.m., so I'll have a banana pudding at the press conference.
All right.
That'll be a good pick-me-up. I need a little sugar rush.
Bring another one for myself, too.
That brisket sandwich, I don't think I can do it again unless I get it on my own. And I don't know, in the trips to Colorado this year, in Fort Collins or Colorado Springs, if they've got a Bucky's there yet. So
close to Fort Collins.
Not as mobile on the basketball trips as the football trips.
You can Uber.
I'm going to Uber to a convenience store.
Yeah, it's not a convenience store. It's a Costco of a warehouse store of.
You already swear by it.
Of convenience stores.
All right, update coming up on Oklahoma and Alabama. Oklahoma has threatened a bit, but nothing's happened on the scoreboard. 7.5 minutes left in the first quarter. Deep shot just missed there by Mateer. But we'll have more on Bama and Oklahoma, and then we'll go through the full NFL slate. And, of course, get to the storylines around the Raiders. As Adam mentioned, he's heading to H-Town to watch the Texans and Las Vegas.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I hate watching games with you. Because now I know you said it on the air what your rooting interest is here. And I
said Oklahoma and Alabama are underway. Go blue.
Yeah.
That's what I just tweeted out.
I don't really have a rooting interest in this one. I did bet Alabama just before the game. I don't mind losing the money. I don't mind Alabama losing.
The current score of the game, for those that aren't watching, is Kalen DeBoer to Michigan 7, Kenny Dillingham to Michigan 0.
And Oklahoma just punched one in. It's 7-0. Because on the Alabama side, you know, it's one of the evil empires of college football. Did they deserve to be in the CFP this year? Maybe, maybe not. Nick Saban, who is tied at the hip with Alabama, has been really annoying and I think disrespectful to especially players this week with his blather about the group of six deserving no spot in the CFP, which I just think is such bullcrap action. And then on the side of Oklahoma, I've never really liked Oklahoma, and I saw a conversation today that was up on social media with one of the Oklahoma, whatever city they're in, Oklahoma Sports Radio, Norman, Oklahoma City, whatever it is. I know where it is. It's Norman. But there was a conversation about how Oklahoma doesn't miss Lincoln Riley. And it's like, it's been 2 years. Relax. Yeah. Let's see what happens. USC just got the number one class in the country, and so much of your year-to-year result in college football. And this is why you can't really read a coach until like 5 years into their regime. So much of it is dependent on the quarterback. And a year ago, Oklahoma chose to stay with the wrong quarterback. This year, they went out and got the number one or two guy on the market. Did they get everything you were supposed to get out of John Mateer? No, but they got enough, and Venables is a defensive guy. But we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, with the good riddance to Lincoln, I'd be careful on that one.
How do we feel about Kyler Murray being there? I mean, I know he's not playing, but he does have a game this weekend.
You know, that's a good segue into the NFL. We haven't talked about that, about Kyler Murray at all. I saw someone the other day just, you know, kind of throwing something up against the wall to see if it would stick, saying that the Cardinals should trade with the Dolphins. Huh? Kyler Murray for Tua.
Your problem for ours?
Well, the problem there is the Miami problem is a lot bigger because of the financials.
Yeah.
Tua's owed a lot more money. As I was making the case this last offseason, I was pitching that the Raiders should trade for Kyler Murray as the bridge, because his contract is actually pretty affordable because he signed it so long ago. I don't think either team would be much interested in taking the other team's problem.
No.
The Cardinals are not taking on Tua just to get rid of Kyler Murray.
Would they take on Geno Smith to get rid of Kyler Murray?
Does anyone have to take on Geno Smith?
Not necessarily, but it would be helpful in terms of making a deal.
What is the contract?
It's 26 next year. It's not prohibitive. I think it's fine. If they want to get rid of it, they can. I think the problem is if you keep him, I think 3 days after the league year, there's like $3 million guaranteed for 2027, which you don't want to get to. So I think they have to make a pretty quick decision.
Are you saying that Kyler Murray coming to the Raiders would even be a possibility?
Well, yeah, depending on if, you know, if they draft a quarterback, by the way, because if I had the number one pick of on the Raiders, I'm trading that pick.
Yep.
And I'm not taking a quarterback right there. So I'm stockpiling for 2027, which I talked about this the other day somewhere else, but Todd McShay, I don't know if you saw this, said 2027 is potentially the greatest quarterback class in NFL draft history. Now, I would vehemently disagree. Not only are we too far out to know that, but that's a pretty lofty bar to try to live up to. And I think his assumption in saying that was that Ty Simpson and Dante Moore would return to school and be a part of that.
Boy, wouldn't that be a hoot?
But one of the quarterbacks he included, and I don't disagree with him. I think he's a really good player. But I think UNLV fans might be interested to know. One of the quarterbacks he said, I mean, Jade Mahava is going to be part of that class.
Wow.
Okay. And he will. He'll be up there. But, I mean, that's one of the guys that they're counting in for next year. So I would disagree with that. But I will say it's going to be a much stronger class next year than this year. I would rather have the pick next year. So I would be trading this and looking for a quarterback for next year. And you can do worse than Kyler Murray. They're not going to win a championship next year. I hope people understand that. I'm not saying get Kyler Murray. Go to the, like, no, like, you just need somebody to play quarterback.
He's a bridge.
While you're waiting for your quarterback in 2027.
And I hope they make a lot of progress this offseason with their O-line. But if they don't, then I would like to have a guy back there who can scoot the hell out of the pocket and be dangerous on the edges. Now, I'm not saying Kyler Murray is what he was 6 years ago, but he's not Geno Smith.
No, he's not. I would take him. It's not my first choice if I'm running the Raiders, but it's on the list of possibilities.
Boy, you opened a bunch of can of worms there. Adam Hill, Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas.
Also, Will Campbell is pounding beers at the Celtics game on the Jumbotron.
Okay.
They also have a game Sunday.
They can have a good time on. Well, he's – wait, is he playing?
Oh, good question. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Do I want to do the number one pick talk right now? I guess we can spend another minute on it. Do you think with Mendoza, if the Raiders had the number one pick, would there be – how many teams would be jonesing behind them to move up? Would one of the teams be the Giants?
No.
If you're the Raiders, would you do a – hey, you can move up to one and take Mendoza, but we'll take Jackson Dart, and we're going to take a lot more.
Okay. Yes, I would do that. I don't think they're going to do it. Yeah, because
you would do that if you were the Raiders.
If I was the Raiders,
there are a lot of people worried about Jackson Dart and his smarts in terms of the way he plays football.
Well, including Dan Quinn on Hard Knocks. Yes, I would do that if I was the Raiders. I would take that deal. but I don't know if that's the case, because part of like my course of action if I was running the Raiders would be to try to get the number one pick, do whatever you have to do to get it, and then auction it off to the highest bidder. The problem with that is somebody needs to fall in love with Fernando Mendoza, or yep. potentially Dante Moore, but somebody needs to be in love with Mendoza to want to trade up, because it wouldn't be me. I'm not going to get there with him. So it would have to be another team like really falling in love with him, and then you say, all right, we're going to trade this away. We're going to get multiple first-round picks for next year in a very, very loaded draft. We look at what the Texans are doing. How did they build this? I mean, they got C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson the same year with two first-round picks, and they moved around in that draft to do it and got aggressive. If the Raiders had multiple first-round picks next year, could they possibly get their choice of quarterback and Jeremiah Smith? Like, that's a pretty good way to start a franchise. So I would be trying to make every pick I can get for 2027 happen.
So that was your reference to the Texans as a blueprint?
Yeah, obviously getting a young coach too, like a very good young coach. And people want to say offense. I think it can be offense or defense. I'm kind of a big Chris Shula fan right now with what he's doing, although last night a little bit of issues. But yeah, I mean, a young coach who has a different way to think about it than maybe some older coaches do. Although credit to Pete Carroll this year for pretty woke fourth down decision making. Part of that might just be you're so bad and behind all the time, but he's been pretty good at it. And I know they have an analytics department over there, but yeah, young coach, and then get multiple draft picks, strike in one year, and make a move, and try to go that way, because you're not going to build it next year. You're not going to be good next year. It's just not going to happen. So 2-3 years down the road is where you should be looking.
Geno Smith is playing on Sunday.
Yes. And if your question is why, I can't tell you.
Who are the quarterbacks in the organization right now?
Geno Smith.
Yep.
Aiden O'Connell. Kenny Pickett. Cam Miller.
I mean, I made the call on Tuesday. Cam Miller's got to play the rest of the way.
Well, here's yes and no. Because I don't think he's going to deliver anything. I don't think he's going to make you – he's going to blow you away and, like, star. But you're pretty. The Raiders right now are running things perfectly.
Like, so you actually think putting Geno in is the right move
to make sure you lose
over Cam Miller?
I would just be worried about a spark. They're not winning this week. I don't think. I mean, that's not
and we saw what the Dolphins did, right? They're like
next week.
They're like Zach Wilson. No, Quinn Ewers, get in there.
Well, they want to get a look at their young quarterback of the future.
To get a look at him?
I think so. I don't think anybody has the it's possible that he could be the future quarterback.
Cam Miller was selected ahead of Quinn Ewers.
But that was questioned at the time.
I know. Just saying.
Yeah. I don't think anybody is harboring any illusions that Cam Miller is the quarterback of the future.
I wasn't either. Yeah. I just want the best opportunity to do what you need to do down the stretch.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, it's direct snap.
Well, just punt on first down. Although punt's been their best play, so maybe not.
What is the locker room like this week in terms of purpose to play and motivation?
It's actually fine, and I talked to a couple of players. I was working on something potentially where I just said, "Look, this is completely off the record in terms of I'm not using your name." So just more on background. I just when I tell you that obviously fans are cheering for you to lose, how do you feel about that? And almost to a person, it was, haven't heard it, don't care, which I think is a lie. But it's more like, what good does a draft pick do me? Which is true. Like, so, they have a better chance to draft a potential replacement for me? Or I'll be gone somewhere else next year and this team will be better for it? Like, no. So it is this balance of the players, especially ones that don't have long-term deals or aren't going to be a part of the future, not only could care less about that, they also, if they're going to be somewhere else, don't want to help the Raiders get a better draft pick. So, I mean, there is that weird balance. And at the same time, it's an understanding that when you aren't going 100% or when you aren't trying to win or do whatever you can to win, like, that is when you leave yourself vulnerable to potentially get hurt too. And it is a very dangerous business. So I don't think there's going to be – I mean, every player is preparing like they're trying to win and trying to win a very important game, as they should be. That's how it should be. but they just haven't been able to find anything that would lead you to believe that they have the chance to do that.
LV Bowl is coming up on New Year's Eve. We've got a pair of tickets right now. The game is at the Al on Wednesday, December 31st. LVBowl.com is where you can get your tickets, LVBowl.com. It's Nebraska. It's Utah. It's coming up on New Year's Eve. Pair of tickets going out right now to caller 7-364-1100, 364-1100.
Cofield & Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
All right, last 5 minutes of the show. We are back tomorrow. We do a double dip on Football Friday and then Saturday mornings. Saturday morning show, much different than today's show. Heavy, heavy college football, heavy college basketball now. And we'll have some good guests tomorrow and get you ready for Running Rebels against Fresno State in college basketball tomorrow here in town.
How much of that show will be dedicated to discussing Alabama's replacement?
Well, you're very happy right now because you think Kalen DeBoer, if Alabama loses, will become available almost immediately for Michigan.
Yeah, I think he flies from Oklahoma to Ann Arbor.
He doesn't go home.
I don't think he's on the team playing.
Well, they're not off to a great start. They're down 10-0.
Good.
And they probably should be bigger.
Yeah. Look, Kalen DeBoer, hopefully he's been focused on his job, which is keeping guys from going in the portal at Michigan and not preparing for this game.
That's his job.
His job is with Michigan. As long as they can hold on to this 10-0 deficit, everything's going well.
Well, there were people on this show who were worried about Alabama not having everyone on board in terms of prep with some of the coaches leaving for other gigs.
Yeah, like Kalen DeBoer?
Well, the new coach at Oregon State is on the staff. Total yardage, Oklahoma, 118. Alabama, 12.
Is that a...
Only 10-0.
Is that a Raiders game?
Sounds like it, right?
It hasn't been good. Oklahoma certainly... controlled the action so far. They've been the much stronger team in the first quarter, and hopefully that continues. Just get a quick game, get it over with, get the announcement done.
You got to play on Bears Packers or Eagles Commanders tomorrow?
I do think the Eagles roll.
Bears have now flipped to 1.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I think not that they usually matter, but in this case it might a little bit. I don't think Josh Jacobs is playing, so that could be potentially a factor in terms of the Packers running game. And I also saw a Bears prop on Caleb Williams rushing yards. I would take that over. Bears have a ton of injuries in the wide receiver core, though. That's pretty much going to be DJ Moore on his own. That's going to be tough.
I laid 3 with the Chiefs in the contest against the Titans. This is ridiculous. Do they have any pride?
No. Did you see the list of guys that were ruled out today?
Oh, no.
It was just like half the team out.
Chargers are going to lose outright at the Cowboys, right?
No.
You don't think so? Adrenaline dump? Big wins?
Very interested in this line. The fact that the Chargers are a dog now that I saw. Did it flip again?
Oh, Chargers are a dog, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Really?
Crazy. Cowboys are done.
I think it's a letdown spot. But I will say the one thing that would make me hesitate is that the Chargers, put aside the Mahomes injury, because that's a little bit fluky. How many guys did the Chargers put on their ass for the Chiefs last week where the Chiefs were like, oh, God, like I can't get up. They played. That was a physical frigging game.
I've been watching Houston Texans film all week, and I've actually been talking to some of the players from the Raiders about it. Like, how much film? This is insane. Like, I don't want to
use.
What
do they say?
No, they're like, yeah, they're, I mean, we have to be ready for it, obviously. Okay. But right. They are, it's crazy how physical the Texas team is. And I will say, not always legally. Like, they're willing to go over the line. It is a brutal, brutal game every time you watch the Texans play.
Major, major game in the AFC, Jaguars and Broncos. Denver's 3.5.
Bo Nix had a really good game last week.
Holy cow.
Couldn't believe it. First one I've ever seen out of him, but he was really good. See if you can keep that going.
Thanks to Mr. Ruffin for having us here today and tomorrow at Treasure Island inside the Golden Circle Sports Bar. Come on down. Jake Paul and Anthony Joshua fight will be up later on. Well, there's some yelling going on the Oklahoma sidelines. There's some intensity with the coach and one of the defensive linemen. 10-0 right now with Oklahoma and Alabama. Good job by Big John here. Great job all week long. Back in studio by James. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow, Saturday, 9 o'clock with Throw the Flag. Remember, they have breakfast that goes overnight and all the way until 12:30 tomorrow. And the happy hour starts at 10 a.m. College football, college football, college football.